Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Chefs. Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Yes, yes. What's going on, Sports City? It's your boy Sears back for the week two NFL wrap-up show. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And as my man Hove would say, I definitely appreciate that. But you guys know I don't do anything without my theme music, man. I got a lot to talk about, man. It was a crazy week two. But let's go, man. Freeway, let's go. Let's go. Y'all know what time it is. Every Tuesday, man, this thing gets me right. Call the numbers 929-477-2759. Lots of little Sports City Chefs. Before I get the chefs in the building, man, I wanted to pay respects and give my biggest heartfelt condolences to Nick Chubb. What I saw happen in Acushnet Stadium yesterday was one of the most gruesome injuries I've ever seen. So before we even start talking ball today, and breaking down week two, I wanted to pay respectful respect to due. I understand he's a divisional opponent. He's a rival. But you never want to see anybody go down like that. So prayers up to him and his family. With that being said, I got the head honcho in the building, the man who makes this all happen. Chief, what's going on, my guy? How are we doing this evening, sir?
Young Gunner, just another victim of the ghetto. Posted pivot in the city to work. My pop broke his pivot, got addicted to work. Man, his ass is shame. It's a game. I made my way through the game. Took off the blazer, loosened up the tie. Whoa, I'm feeling some type of way. Timeless is alive. What's going on, everybody? We got to get into this thing. I'm a little frustrated with some news that I done heard coming out of the mitten, but in the words of Naughty by Nature, everything is going to be all right.
Yeah, man. Yeah, TP, what's going on, man? It's a pleasure to hear from you, sir. I know you got a lot to talk about regarding the Detroit Lions, but before we get to that, I definitely wanted to cover some news and notes from around the league. I led with it this afternoon, but, you know, Nick Chubb did end up on season-ending IR. Based off what I'm reading, based on the doctors that I've spoken to, and based on his history, that, you know, injury could definitely, you know, alter the trajectory of his career, not more or less his season. So we got that to deal with and that to talk about. Saquon Barkley is dealing with a high ankle. Brian Daboll said that he's not ruling him out for Thursday, but let's keep it a bean. I'll be very, very shocked if he plays this upcoming Thursday versus the San Francisco 49ers. So we'll see what happens. They're calling him a fast healer. Unless he, you know, was talking in tongues and, you know, doing his thing sizzle with the church and all that, I'm not too sure how that's going to work, but I digress. Shaq Thompson is gone for the rest of the year with a peck. Jamal Williams, running back for the New Orleans Saints, has another hamstring. It just seems like guys are falling like, you know, like hotcakes. And, you know, Gardner Johnson from the – looks like he's playing with the Lions. His peck, he's on IR as well. So it seems like that injury bug is hitting everybody. Minkah Fitzpatrick went to the hospital yesterday for precautionary reasons. Everything that I'm hearing based off Mike Tomlin's press conference this afternoon, all signs that he's going to be able to go on a show if he do have to turn around and play Sunday night. But, TT, I wanted to start with you, sir. Any of these injuries that you wanted to kind of touch base on and kind of, you know, speak your mind on, and then we'll press on and talk looking at the rest of these games?
Sports City, it's about to get frisky in here. Serious, all of the things that you just named other than Minkah and CJ, that's the funny part that me and you are tied together on that part, right? Our safeties are in trouble, right? But all of the other people that you mentioned, what do they have in common? Do you know what they have in common?
Hamstrings?
They're all running backs. All of the running backs are injured, right? And there was a link that I read today and yesterday, but more of I read of it today, that they think running backs are faking injuries because they're being lowballed mm-hmm. with the money. So now this has turned into a serious situation because me, being a Lion fan, I watched that game from start to finish, right? If you didn't, well, you didn't mention his name, but David Montgomery got injured. He said himself that he was going to be out for several weeks. Dan Campbell came out and said he's day-to-day. He has a thigh bruise, right, which I'm not downplaying it. That could hurt. I never had it. I don't know the experience of the situation, but I seen the play that he got hurt. Serious. It was a screen pass, right? He shakes the shoes out, the dude, right? Like, dude up there on the sideline, he shakes the crap out of him. But the dude caught his foot. He's holding on to Dave's foot. Dave looking around. Ain't nobody there to get him. He did like a spin move while the guy has his foot. He got another yard and just fell to the ground. Nobody hit him. He didn't hit the ground hard or anything, but he's laying on the turf, rocking and rolling and rocking. Goes to the sideline. He's rubbing that thigh area and trying to get it right and just went to the back. Now, it's like, you didn't take a severe hit for it to be weeks long of an injury. And now Jamal Williams' situation is out there. Saquon's situation looked different. Saquon did look like a role. If he's faking that, that's even worse because I feel like they could be overloading Saquon. And that's I always say this for the past 4 or 5 years of what the Giants have been doing to Saquon, like injury after injury after injury. He's been the savior. Well, not savior, but been the only one that's been positive on the offensive side of the ball for the Giants consistently while he's healthy. So all of the other running backs that are popping up on the list, it's like this is what these organizations set these running backs up going into the summer and going into this season on saying, well, you ain't worth it. They told Jonathan Taylor he's not worth it. Now everybody needs Jonathan Taylor right now. Do the Colts get to sit there and sit on him until they're ready to get him off of the list and put him back on the field? So this is deep all across the board on what majority of these needful, let me not call them needy because that makes it put it on the face of the running back. I want to put it on the face of the organization. What they need for towards these running backs, running backs are needed. They're showing that the running game is needed, even though this has turned into a heavily passing league. Look at the Browns. Seriously, you, my little brother, we go at it day after day, show after show. But the Browns could have won if Chubb was playing. If Nick Chubb was playing, he'd have helped take the ball out of Deshaun Watson's hands. I feel like they could have took that game over. But once it turned one-dimensional and it was all Deshaun Watson, the Steelers exposed the heck out of him, game over. Deshaun Watson is not worth 230, but that's a whole other discussion. But that's where I'm at right now with the majority of the injuries that's going across the league. Majority of them are running backs, and they're trying to sit out for time. Like, it ain't just one of these week-long situations. They're trying to let these organizations know we worth more than a penny that y'all trying to give us.
Yeah, actually, I agree with what you're saying there, and it's something that I wanted to talk about, you know, with the collective when they got in. But I did see the report, and I kind of felt some type of way about it. But before I get my position on it, you know, my co-host decided, you know, come and join me, man. He put the law homies to bed and, you know, got all his, you know, his stuff in a row, man. Villain, what's going on, my guy? How we doing, sir?
What's up, fellas? What's up, TP? What's up, Sirius, man? Sorry about that. I had to take care of some stuff, you know, have a long talk with my son, you know, back to school night and, you know, football practice and everything. So we here, we grinding. Ready to cook, let's cook.
Parenting 101 at its finest. And before I get moving, Mr. Harvey's in the building, man. Mr. Harvey, how we doing this evening, sir?
Man, I'm doing all right. I'm 2-0, so better to win ugly than lose pretty. Let's cook, fellas.
Just awesome, awesome. Well, you heard what TP said, you know, speaking about the running backs and the NFLPA suggesting that the running backs, quote unquote, fake injuries and stuff like that. And again, TP alluded to it that the running backs that are popping up injured more often than not. But Villain, I wanted to come to you, man. Saquon is your boy. You know, we heard reports that it'd be 3 weeks, and then now your man Dable saying he's a fast healer. Hallelujah. He may end up playing on Thursday versus the 49ers. Talk to me, man. Give me the lay of the land about this running back situation and any of the injuries that took place over the weekend. Obviously, Nick Chubb is the big one, but any of these other injuries that took place over the weekend that kind of caught your attention?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Montgomery because I heard what TP said about a thigh injury. I had one, right? TP, you remember I had one sophomore year, and I was in the hospital. You know, like I had a really deep thigh bruise that got infected, and I had a knot on my leg, like the size of a fist. So, like, it could be really mild, or it could be a really deep, like to the bone fibers I had, like really bad. So you got to exercise that caution. Do I think he might want to, you know, sit out a week or two extra, or like any of these running backs? I hope not, man. I really hope that they wouldn't do that, but it's tough because the running back position, like we've talked about, has been so devalued, right? And they don't get paid as much, and this is why, right? Because they get hurt, right? They don't hold value for a long period of time or throughout their whole contract. So it's like that double-edged sword. They're important, but then, like, they don't – you give them the money, and then they get hurt, like Ezekiel Elliott or, you know, they don't live up to the contract. So it's kind of tough, right? But as far as Nick Chubb go, I mean, prayers up, man. I really hope I hope his career is not over. It was really sad to see, really horrific to see. So prayers up to Nick Chubb. He suffered that injury at Georgia, and now he suffered it again. So I hope, you know, I just hope everything's okay with him. But as far as Barkley goes, you know, it looked like a pretty severe roll-up. You know, he has come back pretty quickly. I hope he doesn't come back for the San Francisco game. I would rather not rush him back for 3 days if there's a chance to kind of just hold him back and get him all the way healthy in a week or two. So I hope he doesn't play. I wouldn't be surprised if he does, but, like, really, there's no way I would have him on the field.
Yeah.
Barry, do me a favor. Mm-hmm. Go look at the David Montgomery hit or the tackle or there is on YouTube, and then mm-hmm. you'll see what I'm talking about. Like, yours is mm-hmm. in the fray of the trenches. He literally fell, like, on his own will. Wait till you see the play that he supposedly, you know, got week-long of an injury. Just wait till you see the play. Just look at the play.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I'll take a look.
Yeah. I'm looking at it now on YouTube. It does look kind of interesting to say the least. One more chef to get in the building. The new grandfather himself, you know, the 49er fan, breaking news, he's in the building, man. How we doing, sir?
Yeah,
you
doing?
Right. There he is.
What is good, boys? Another week of NFL action in the books. And yes, I am a grandfather. We got a mini chef that'll be cooking before you know it. But I'm just blessed to be here with you guys talking NFL action week two.
Congratulations.
You heard the conversation at hand, sir. These injuries are starting to pile up like blocks. And then TP kind of spiced it up a little bit, speaking about an article that is being floated around by the NFLPA suggesting that these running backs, primarily the running backs, but I'm pretty sure others are probably thinking about it or doing it, somewhat fake these injuries, so to speak. So I wanted to get your position on it. And then I'm going to push it to Mr. Harvey and then press on.
Well, I'm going to keep it pretty short and to the point, serious. They have been talking about injury concerns for a lot of years, and I'm a huge proponent that you can't go non-contact in the offseason, which they started doing, as you boys know, several years ago, and really prepare your body for the rigors of the season. So early on in the year, I mean, the Niners have literally been the most injured team over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, to the point where we ran out of quarterbacks in the NFC Championship game last year. So I am very familiar with the injury bug. I know that there's a rule that's supposed to be voted on at the Players Association is putting it forward to the NFL Owners Association that they're trying to basically get all fields to be grass instead of turf. I'm sure you guys are probably familiar with that. But unfortunately, man, injuries are a part of the game. But I will tell you, everybody does want to devalue the running back. But it is funny because you're willing to spend $25 million a year on a wide receiver that will touch the ball 5 times a game, but you won't pay the running back who touches the ball 25 times a game a comparable salary, right? And I'm not saying, listen, I understand each position has their own value, but I'm just saying, you know, everybody balked at the fact that, you know, the Niners gave Christian McCaffrey the money they did, but without Christian McCaffrey, the offense looks totally different. So without Nick Chubb, that offense looks totally different. Regardless of what you think of the Giants, you can ask Barry. Without Saquon Barkley, that offense looks totally different. So, you know, people can say, hey, devalue the running back. We'll just bring somebody else new. And, yeah, well, as many success stories as we've seen in the first or second round or even third round for running backs, I can tell you just as many that have literally flamed out and are out of the league. So if you get an ultra-successful back, a guy that's consistently giving you 1,000 yards a year, they should be compensated, bar none. I mean, to me, it's that simple. It's a valuable position, and other than the quarterback, it touches the ball probably more times than anyone else on the field.
Yeah, I absolutely respect exactly what you said there, and you mentioned something that I wanted to double-click on, that Mr. Harvey, I'm going to come to you next. It's about production. It's about the value that, you know, an individual kind of has on his individual team. I definitely think these backs need to be paid, especially the bell cow ones that have been, you know, the cornerstone essential, you know, I guess rhyme or reason for the offense. Like, the offense is built around, you know, some of these guys. Hell, Saquon Barkley, the offense is built around this guy. there is nobody else. You know, missing with that Daniel Jones nonsense, and we'll probably talk about that later on. But I wanted to give Mr. Harvey an opportunity to talk about this running back situation and the injuries that you know, kind of took place over the weekend. Harvey talked about Jamal Williams, how the impact of that as you prepare for your week three matchup. You mentioned something in the chat, so definitely bring it out here. But obviously, talk to me about how this running back position and what was going on with the injuries.
It seems crazy that so many are getting hurt just 2 weeks in to the season. As far as Jamal Williams, I mean, hamstring thing, you know, he's been there from the beginning too. So it's not like this is late to camp and all this. I can understand the hesitancy to give long-term, multi-year contracts to running backs, especially looking at, I mean, you're a play away. Look at, you know, what just happened with Nick Chubb. However, this average annual salary needs to be way better. Owners and people need to do better by these running backs. And honestly, there should be multiple-year deals, though. And, you know, maybe somehow a team can recover some insurance or recover some, get some salary cap relief if a guy is unable to produce. I don't know. But, you know, if this is something that was kind of planned by some of these guys, could this have been cooked up at this running back meeting? I don't know, but it seems very, very, very fishy. As far as the Saints go, you know, Kamara's out one more game. Kendra Miller, the rookie from TCU, injury. he's coming off injury, got back healthy, played some of the preseason, now nursing another injury. So, you know, he was questionable this week, so they were hoping to get him back this weekend. That didn't happen. And so you hope to get him back this week. Other than that, you got, you know, Tony Jones, who played a little bit this past weekend. So he would probably play some running back. But I think you're going to see Taysom Hill handle a lot of the running back duties for the Saints this weekend, probably on a lot of pitches and things like that, because he hasn't really done a lot of handoffs, like traditional, like, you know, tailback, first man through, put the ball in the pocket, hold it high and tight and take off kind of thing. So, you know, maybe they spend some practices this week really working with him on how to take handoffs, but you know, I think they'll get it to him on pitches and things like that where he can just kind of catch it and go. But, you just got to kind of piece it together. And it sucks that it's happening to so many, many teams. It's like it's the war of attrition, man, at the running back position. And it's mighty funny for owners and general managers and people to undervalue the position the way they have. It's amazing how much people are scrambling right now.
Yeah, man, it's interesting, and you mentioned, you know, Taysom Hill, the Swiss Army knife that the Saints have. I wonder what they're going to do. One of the things that I saw in Greenwood, I'll come to you here in a second, sir. One of the things I saw, you know, today with the whole Kareem Hunt, again, Nick Chubb thing with Kareem Hunt, is popped back up at Cleveland Browns training camp, Cleveland Browns building, you know, giving him a look, and I feel some type of way about that. I'm going to come back to my point here in a second, but Mr. Controversy himself is in the building, kind of see what's going on with these injuries to these running backs and other major players to these teams, man. Talk to me about it, man. It's week two, and, you know, we got Nick Chubb's injury. We got a lot of running backs. Saquon's injured. It's a mess out there. Talk to me, man.
So if this is a strategy, and I don't really believe it is, it's a bad one on the part of the of let's just call them the high-priced running backs in the league, because it's not increasing their value to have them get injured season after season after season. And that's why their value is so low to begin with, is because longevity at the position just isn't there. Running backs have the shortest shelf life of any position. That's why they're paying wide receivers so much more, is because wide receivers can play till 32, 33, if they're really good, 35. Like, I mean, Adam Thielen's still in the league, and he's in his low, almost mid-30s, and still starting as a wide receiver. Meanwhile, if you find a 33-year-old running back, it's an anomaly, especially if you want them to be productive. So, but it's just the way the league is going now, and they might, and it's just next man up, and we're seeing these guys who are third, fourth, fifth round guys come in and still be somewhat productive. Meanwhile, the Lions are paying Jahmyr Gibbs all this money of a 12th overall pick and not seeing the same dividends that that the Rams are for Kayron John or Kayron the running back who took over for Cam Akers. Healthy scratch, by the way. Kayron Williams, yeah. So there's always going to be another guy to step into that running back position because there's only so many positions in the NFL.
Yeah, but that's what Brian is hitting on, though. But Brian is telling you that's why the running back shouldn't be paid low. If big name running backs are getting knocked out, that should show the importance of it. Because look at Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is out. Cleveland's whole offensive scheme went to crap. The Rams are looking to get rid of Cam Akers right now. Kyren Williams is not the bell cow running back. They just are fortunate that Matt Stafford wants to throw the crap out of the ball. They are actually productive because they pass the ball. If they had a running game, I feel like that'll help the Rams out because the Rams are doing better than people expected. But it ain't the run game that's keeping them there. Stafford is actually playing better than he used to. Those are the separate situations.
If you're an organization, why would you pay more for a positional player that's not going to live up to the contract? They're not going to be able to fulfill the contract. As a running back, I would want to maximize my value and get as much money, especially up front, as I possibly can. Like, if I'm a running back, I don't want to be sitting in college for 3 years. I want to come out when I want to come out to get that money as soon as possible because by 28, I'm out of the league. I get that. But as an organization, they're not paying these guys because they can't survive the contract because of these injuries. You know what I mean? It's like it's a catch-22 that's totally unfair.
Right. No, I get what you're saying, but look at what you're saying. If their shelf life is a 4 to 5 year span, let's say that, right? But how much they mean to the team, Exhibit A, your big blue, a.k.a. the Giants. Look at what they look like every time Saquon go down. The Giants get hurt. They look bad. When Saquon's healthy, the Giants went to the playoffs. They went to the playoffs. There is a need for that running back position, whether they like it or not. The next man up, who's the next man up to carry the bell for the Giants? And without Saquon, they play the Niners. This Thursday, the next game after that, they got a tough game. I think they had one break in the schedule against the Seahawks, and that's not an easy game. The Giants could come out this thing like 1-5 out of the first six games. And knowing that they need Saquon to go into battle, because I'm not giving the Giants no credit for what they did to the Cardinals. You can miss me with that because I know the Cardinals are trying to lose on purpose. If the Cardinals wanted to win that game, they could have won that game, and they could have won that off of James Conner, and they didn't. They started passing the ball instead of running the clock out. And Exhibit A, here we go with the running back. They took the running back out of the game. They put it into the hands of Dobbs, and Dobbs ain't been there for 4 weeks. Come, let's be real now. Let's be real.
Hey, serious.
Yeah, talking serious.
Let me just ask the group one question, and I think everybody will get this right. What do you think, what is the most important commodity in the NFL? If you think of what the NFL has as a commodity, we all know that star players are important, but you got a huge contract. So what is the most important commodity that you can have in the NFL?
Position-wise?
No, not position-wise. What is the most important commodity you can have? This isn't a trick question. I'll just go ahead and say it. It's draft capital. It's getting a guy like a Brock Purdy that's making less than $1 million a year so that you can pay other guys. It's getting a Jahmyr Gibbs or a Bijan Robinson, and they're making next to peanuts compared to the other guys similar skill set-wise at their position. So I only say that to say this. It's very easy to say, hey, you know what? Running backs are only good for 4 or 5 years, and then after that, it's not worth paying them or whatever. If that was truly the case, if the running back position was truly devalued and really didn't matter, and you could stick, you know, any Tom, Dick, or Harry back there, I promise you teams wouldn't be drafting running backs in the first round. I promise you two running backs wouldn't win the top 15. And anybody that thinks that running backs aren't valuable, go watch Atlanta. There's a reason they're 2-0, and it's because of Bijan Robinson. That is why they're 2-0, period.
But
you know what?
It's
funny you mentioned
that Cordarrelle Patterson wasn't a slouch in that exact same system and in that exact same position last year, and he was not a first-round pick. He was a discarded wide receiver that was able to make it work.
Go back and check Cordarrelle Patterson's draft status.
Well, I mean, but the Atlanta Falcons didn't pay that draft capital. That was a free agency acquisition.
No, but the point is, you made a point about what his draft status was. No, he was actually a top pick. So he does have that athleticism. He does have that talent. When he came out of Tennessee, he was a baller. And you know what? He just took a little bit longer to develop. Now, I know you're not trying to compare Bijan and Cordell. Cordell did a great job. Cordell is a Swiss Army knife. But Cordell is not Bijan Robinson. Bijan is probably faster than Cordell and weighs an extra 35 pounds. And as twitchy as Cordell was, because he was a punt returner coming out of Tennessee as well as a wide receiver, and to be honest, he was probably a more accomplished punt returner. Bijan Robinson is probably the most polished back that has come out since, you could say Saquon, but I'm going to go Adrian Peterson. I think he has that type of ceiling.
And I'm not disagreeing with that, and that is why he went so high in the draft capital. It's not because running backs are suddenly valuable. It's because if you get a unicorn, you draft the unicorn. And heck, if it was comparable though, like even like, and I'm going to say this, even offensive guards who are unicorns get picked in the top 10.
Like, understandable.
At,
and you know
Quentin
what?
Nelson.
Offensive guards, there's offensive guards that are paid, James, there's offensive guards in this league that are paid more than running backs.
Sure.
There's offensive guards making $15+ million a year. So, no, I'm not disagreeing with you, but let's use your unicorn analogy. You've been on this earth 30-plus years. How many times have you seen a unicorn? None. That's why they call it a unicorn, right? How many people got drafted in the top 15 that was a running back this year in the draft? Two. That's not a unicorn.
Yeah. I mean, Bijan is a unicorn. Jameer might be a unicorn. I'm like, because, I mean, let's just, sometimes you get two unicorns in one draft. Like, look at the quarterback position, for example. It's not always the case. Actually, more often than not, it's not. But there have been times when you've seen two guys, both, heck, Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers are borderline Hall of Fame guys. They're not unicorns, but they're both highly thought of quarterbacks in the league.
But
it's not like you can't find two different guys who are top tier. Style guys, and that they both can't be in one draft class. And if you look at the 3 years before that, I think you would struggle to find more than one or two running backs that went even in the first round, let alone in the top 10 or 12.
The thing of the position is that
the reason why they're not getting drafted high and the reason why they're not getting paid is for this reason. They either hit the wall, and it used to be 30. Now it's getting closer to 28. They're hitting this wall where they're not as productive as the younger guys at the position, and they need to find basically the world of the NFL revolves around the quarterback position now. They are the highest paid, and they are given the most support possible because of how a successful quarterback, with the exception of the Atlanta Falcons, that at least thus far, but I don't think this is a deep playoff run team. what it means to win a Super Bowl for the quarterback position to be successful, it incentivizes the teams in the league to support it as much as possible. And the metrics show that the running back is not that position.
Well, let me ask you this question. If we use your unicorn analogy and we pay respect to the running backs that have put in the work, put in the time, and has ran into brick walls, why wouldn't you reward them with compensation befitting their position? These aren't the Cordell Patterson's, though. These aren't the Taysom Hill type of, you know, makeshift Swiss Army knife type of guys. I mean, you're looking at Saquon Barkley, whose whole team builds an offense around them. You're looking at a guy like, you know, Austin Eckler, who literally is, I would say, the backbone, but literally the team doesn't play well without him. You know what I'm saying? So ultimately, why would you run the risk of not taking care of these guys when they have taken care of you?
So it's all about future returns as opposed to present returns, and I'm not saying that there's not guys in the league that the teams would be sorefully missing, and those are the guys who got paid, right? Austin Eckler got paid. Christian McCaffrey got paid because of their effect on the offense, and honestly, because of their effect on the support of the quarterback position. Brock Purdy is fine without Christian McCaffrey, but he's better with him. Same thing with Austin Eckler. Austin Eckler makes Justin Herbert better. Not true for all the running backs in the league. We're talking about top 10%, even better than top 10%, top 5% of guys that are at the level of which teams want to pay them. Every other guy in the league is incredibly expendable, whereas the quarterback position, you are seeing Daniel Jones, and I don't want to use Daniel Jones as an example, but he's the most recent guy who's mid, maybe slightly above mid, and getting bank, getting top 10 quarterback salaries just because his contract's up.
What does mid mean?
Middle of the road. Like, just not good, not terrible.
He's just there.
But just a regular dude.
Shit.
Listen, I know what mid means. I know what mid means. I'm from the hood. I'm being funny.
He just wants barely to hear you explain it.
What's that?
I said he just wanted Barry to hear you explain it. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, like, at this point, it's a moot argument. It's ridiculous. But, like, the point is the quarterback position is the most important position. You can win without a star running back. You cannot win without a star quarterback. That's just the fact.
Hold on, the second most important.
Huh?
Is Brock Purdy a star?
Did Brock Purdy win a Super Bowl?
No, not yet. I mean, he did get injured,
okay.
But all the games he started, he has won.
But did Brock Purdy win a Super Bowl?
Uh-oh. I mean, you could literally afford 40 Brock Purdy's for what you're paying for
Breaking
Daniel Jones.
Breaking news. Yes or no question.
Uh-oh.
Did Brock Purdy win a Super Bowl?
Uh-oh. No, he didn't win a Super Bowl because he didn't get the opportunity. His elbow was hanging off to the side.
Okay, so he didn't win a Super Bowl. Did Patrick Mahomes win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, he has. So that means, by your logic, that means Joe Burrow is bomb. Lamar Jackson is bomb.
Hang on a second. You just answered my question. Because you said Brock Purdy won every game that he started, right? When he didn't win, when he got hurt, did they win?
No, he didn't. They didn't.
There you go. You can't win without a quarterback. You can't win without a quarterback. And the second most important position on the offense is left tackle. That's why they get banked. The third most important position on a football team is like your defensive end or defensive tackle, because they get after
I've
the quarterback.
I've seen blindside also.
That's the facts, right? That's the facts. Like these guys, like Andrew Thomas, is probably the least talked about person on the Giants, right? Especially on offense. He got banged this season because it's an important position. They're hard to find. Offensive linemen, I always say, any offensive lineman that hits free agency isn't that good, because no team lets an offensive lineman hit free agency. They pay them, and they keep them if they're good. Like,
so
running back, I love Saquon Barkley. I love my running back. The Giants, if they didn't have him, their fortunes don't change. We win with him. We don't win without him. Like, it doesn't change. The quarterback makes a difference.
But listen, by your logic, you paid upper echelon for the quarterback. You paid upper echelon for the left tackle, the two most important positions on the field, according to you. And what results has that yielded?
I mean,
what have they yielded if they didn't do that?
It wouldn't be any different. Brother, they gave up 40 points in game one and scored zero. Like, it would have been
different.
You could have put a Pop Warner team out there, and it would have been different.
But, I mean, look at the Jets. Look at the Jets.
Right.
They lost their franchise quarterback. They don't have a shot in hell to get to the Super Bowl. They barely might make the playoffs. Going on in Cincinnati. If Burrow's not healthy and he doesn't get it together, like, if he's not on the field, that Bengals team doesn't make it. Like,
but my question to you is, Barry, why is it that the Jets that have a bum at quarterback that just lost their franchise quarterback, you're saying they may not have a chance to make the playoffs? Because the reality is anyone that makes the playoffs has a chance to make the Super Bowl.
But do you think they have a better chance to make the Super Bowl than – have a shot in hell to beat the Dolphins right now? Look at the Dolphins. The Dolphins were 8-3 with Tua healthy. When Tua got hurt, they didn't make the playoffs. Tua's
back
this year.
Wrong.
They're the best offense in the league. Like,
I'm not saying you're not wrong, but also, who, when you watch the Dolphins game against the Chargers ran for over 230 yards against them. So what's the game plan if you have a horrendous quarterback? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But you know what? That's because of the Chargers' defense, not because of the offense.
That's because of Brandon Staley, the defensive guru, and he hasn't figured out how to fix that defense since he's gotten to San Diego. I mean, San Diego. Tannehill said San Diego, right? Since they got to Los Angeles.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
He needs to be fired. That guy needs to be fired, Hughes.
You know what? Hey, we haven't hit that segment yet, but you're absolutely right. It's mind-blowing that a team could average 30 points a game and over 400 yards in offense and be 0-2. Like, mind-boggling. But I'm just saying, when you look at the Dolphins, they got gashed against the run. I'm not saying it's a path to success, but why is it in the playoffs, when the temperatures drop, everybody always talks about defense and running the ball? Why is it that the Niners were able to make it to the NFC Championship game against the Minnesota Vikings with Garoppolo only throwing the ball 8 times if the quarterback is the most important position on the field?
But it didn't win them a Super Bowl. You're just like the Giants won the Super Bowl with Eli Manning, right?
You honestly,
who was their running back?
You've been watching football a long time. Are you telling me you honestly believe the best team wins the Super Bowl every year? Or the team that gets the hottest at the right time?
No, I mean, I got 2 Super Bowls to prove that the team that gets the hottest wins. They weren't the best. The Giants weren't the best team Listen, but they also didn't have the best running back in those games. Jacobs and had Amon Bradshaw.
They also didn't have the best quarterback or the best left tackle. You know what they had?
They had the best team.
Exactly. Listen, I'm going to leave you guys one last thought here. I'm going to leave you with one last thought, and then I'll let you guys hash it out. Jonathan Taylor, everybody thinks it's always over the hill, past their prime backs. Jonathan Taylor and Josh Jacobs, both guys ran for over 1,500 yards. Neither one of their teams want to pay them. Neither one of the teams will allow them to seek a trade somewhere else because they want them. They just don't want to pay them. They're not going to allow them to
make the
playoffs. You can't tell me
if they have enough success in the league, then why wouldn't they want to pay them?
It's because it's the nature of the position. And because you have some ownership group that are cheap.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, gentlemen, I'm leaving this right here, man. Again, this was an appetizer. This was the appetizer. The rest of the show is going to be bananas. But before we press on, let's give a shout-out to our sponsor, PHR Apparel. Let's pay some bills. We'll be right back.
This portion of our program is brought to you by PHI Apparel Company. PHI Apparel Company provides unique designs and high-quality clothing for the great fans of the Philadelphia area. With their original designs for all, there's no doubt that they'll stand out in the crowd. Act now and listeners can use the promo code CHEFS for 15% off any apparel when you shop online at phiapparel.co. That's phiapparel.co. Remember to use the promo code CHEFS for 15% off. Act now while supplies last.
Shout out to PHI Apparel for sponsoring this show and the rest of the shows here on the Sports City Chefs Network. Call the numbers 929-477-2759. Locked and loaded here with Sports City Chefs. I wanted to change gears a little bit, gentlemen, and kind of talk about what's went on this past week around the NFL, man. Like I said, there was a lot that went on, and I wanted to give each of you guys an opportunity to talk about it. Villain, I'm going to come to you first, sir. The New York Giants pulled off the unthinkable and found some offense in the second half and managed to score some points enough to beat the tanking Cardinals. Tell me what you saw from that ballgame, sir.
I mean, you know, I heard what TP said, and a lot of people are kind of saying that they're not impressed with beating the Cardinals. They should have never gotten that position. I agree. But a win is a win in the NFL, just like Coach Tomlin said last night, right? Like, I'm not going to apologize for a win. You know, they were – I wrote the article that they were 0-60, right, coming into the first six quarters of football, and their backs were against the wall. Their season was on the line in a lot of ways. You know, and they had a supreme gut check and had the biggest comeback in team history. You know what I mean? Like, you got to give them a little credit for having a gut check. You got to give them, whatever you want to call it, wet willy or noogie or whatever you want to call it, but for being down 20-0 and being down 28-7 to a team that, you know, you shouldn't be losing to. It's hard to win in the NFL. Some teams make it look easy. It ain't easy, right? So, you know, Daniel Jones stepped up. He had one of the best halves of football that, you know, a lot of people haven't seen. You know, over 250 yards passing, 50 yards rushing, two touchdowns, a rushing touchdown. There's not a lot of quarterbacks that have done that in a game, and he did it in a half. You got to give him credit for that. I don't care who you do it against, right? So it was a big win because you don't want to go 0-2 and go in to see Hughes' team, right? The breaking news is 49ers team in San Francisco. So, you know, it was a must win, and they pulled it together. But they need to play a full, you know, four quarters of football for my taste. But a win is a win.
Can I respond to that, please? Can I respond to that, please? Can I respond to that, please? Please, can
talk
I respond
to
that?
Talk to him.
Miss me with all of that. I could care less on what second half he had. That
offense moved because he was scrambling. He was not going crazy in the passing game. And one with that Cardinals team, they were fine. I watched that game in full capacity. And the crazy part about it is the Cardinals are trying to lose. I could call people that I was watching that game with, and I said, the Giants are going to win the game. You were included in the text when I was saying the Giants are going to rally. I could screenshot it.
Yeah, I muted that conversation. That's fine.
I'm telling you the whole truth on the show. I can tell you the truth. The Cardinals were not trying to win that game. Ain't no way they're going to start. Dobbs was passing the ball. They up three possessions at home. And Connor was barely moving the ball, but was moving the ball against the Giants defense. That's putrid. That's putrid. The crazy part about that win was that made the Giants look like they look like something. They are going to get killed in San Francisco. You said to give them credit for that win. Miss me with that. You guys pulled that win off. A win is a win. I love the slogan, but that game don't measure crap. The Giants are bad. They are bad, and you know it. For that comeback against the Cardinals, that don't count. That was a scrimmage. That was a scrimmage. They were whoever
right,
wants
so
to be the coach.
The Giants are 0-2 going into San Francisco.
So they won a one. They won a one. They won a one. They won a one.
They're 0-2. Because Daniel Jones scrambled for 251.
If you
want to
call
0-2,
if you
want to
call
0-2,
if you want to call 0-2, if you want to call 0-2, then 0-2 is if you want.
It's 0-2. They don't deserve to win that game.
At the end of
the Cardinals blew it more than the Giants won it. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off the next time you start talking like that. That's what I'm going to start doing after you. And the second part about this is that Cardinals team was not trying to win that game. Ain't no way. Who's going to start passing? They up three possessions in a half. Who's passing? With a quarterback that barely know the offense. That's ABC, bro. Like, that's ABC. Why are we passing with a no-name receiver core and Hollywood Brown getting penalty after penalty, like senseless penalties? Senseless penalties. This is Hollywood Brown. He don't want to be there. He just got arrested the other day in Arizona. He don't want to be. Arizona is crap. That was a crappy game, to be honest. That just gave all the New Yorkers hope. Like I said, the first six games, the Giants would be lucky to pull out their second win. Tell me if the Seahawks is the one that y'all might get. I think y'all got the Chiefs. Y'all got the Niners. Y'all got the Eagles. Like, it gets disgusting for y'all. You think that Cardinals game going to measure out to be something big for y'all?
Don't look at the Giants schedule.
Pull up the Giants schedule and look at their next four or five games. Watch this. The one that they got that look okay is the Seahawks, I think, is in New Jersey. Other than that, they on the road against playoff teams.
Give me 20 seconds.
No problem. I can keep on rolling. We can talk about that game in depth.
No, we good. No. They got the Niners, Seahawks, Dolphins. Holy crap! Bills, Commanders. So they got this Commanders, Jets, Raiders coupling right in here. They got a 3-week sale. They got the Commanders, Jets, Raiders. Then they got the Cowboys, Commanders again, Patriots, Packers, Saints, Eagles, Rams, Eagles.
This schedule is ridiculously tough for them.
Yo, that's bonkers. I mean, I'm gonna keep it a whole bean. I'm gonna keep it a whole bean. When I looked at divisions or whatever case it be, I looked at the schedule, which is why I picked the New York Giants to not only miss the playoffs but finish last in the division. But that's another conversation another day. This schedule is not looking good for the Giants. But again, this ain't the Giants conversation, so I keep it pushing. Barry, you want to respond?
Respond to what?
Anything TP alluded to, or the schedule, or anything like
alluded
that?
Alluded to? Like, he just, like, poo-pooed a win. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's a win. So freaking what? It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling.
It should not have been
Giants,
in that position.
The Giants lost in Arizona.
No, they won.
They lost that game.
What went wrong in the first half? Tell me what went wrong in the first half for the Giants.
That they have to play the 49ers, the Seahawks, the Dolphins, the Bills, the Commanders. Because that was your argument.
What went wrong in the first half?
Nothing that happened in the game. I said the Cardinals blew the game on purpose.
They started passing in the second half, and they were up 28-7.
Who cares? That's not my problem. It's not my problem that the rookie head coach doesn't know how to win a game. It's not my problem. We won the game.
You just said who cares? That's the point.
Dude. It's not my fault a rookie head coach doesn't know how to protect the lead. I'm sorry.
You just said, who cares? You said, okay, I said the schedule, how they're going to look in the future. But right now, in comparison to the game,
that was your argument. That's why they lost the game.
Listen, Joshua Dobbs scored a 30-yard run up the middle. The run game was killing y'all. He was beating y'all off the ground. He wasn't going up top beating y'all like that. They were killing him on the ground.
Yes, he was. Were you watching the game? Yes, I watched the whole game. Joshua Dobbs in the first half was throwing the ball all over the place. They should have had points on the first drive, but he overthrew Zach Ertz near the end zone. Whatever. They lost that game. They lost. Fine. We lost.
I'm serious. Talk to me.
All right, man, I'm going to make it short and sweet. I'm going to split the difference between Rocky and Tyson here. So the team that we saw in the second half, the Giants team we saw in the second half, I think is probably what most Giants fans expected to see at the beginning of the year. There's a couple things that still alarm me about this team. They generate no pass rush, which I know if Barry wasn't upset, he'd tell you the same thing, like, you can't be a championship caliber team. You can't be a playoff team if you cannot orchestrate or you cannot put the opposing quarterback under any kind of pressure whatsoever. The other thing that was alarming to me is, and this is just my opinion, the two biggest things for me is I feel like the Giants fan base was just as equally responsible for that victory as the Giants, because if you look at the last two possessions in the fourth quarter, there was multiple false start by the center and the offensive guard for the Cardinals when the Giants were still down. And I'm talking like four and a half minutes left to go in the game. I mean, we're talking 4-minute offense here. It's multiple false starts, which allowed the Giants to get the ball back. And I totally get it. Listen, bad teams find bad ways to lose bad games. But the point that I did want to make about the Giants and specifically about Saquon, since we were talking about it earlier, Barry, is that comeback doesn't happen without Saquon. Saquon accounted for two of the four touchdowns that were scored in the second half, and he had many, many critical catches and, I mean, obviously the one that scored, and runs in that second half. And I think he basically – I know that the 58-yarder to Hyatt was what really got the third quarter going, but I think without Barkley, I really do think they are going to be missing their spark plug. And with the defense not able to get a ton of pressure on Dobbs, I just worry when you're playing against – forget the Niners. When you're playing against teams like Kansas City, Miami, the Bills, if you don't put pressure on Tua, you don't put pressure on Allen – you're going to have a long day. So it was a W. You can't take the W away. They're 1-1. I said before the game started, everybody thought I was crazy, but I said, look, I go, they're tanking for Caleb. I said that literally last Tuesday. You guys know that. I knew they would find a way to lose that game, and they did. I mean, literally in some of the worst ways possible, some of the rocking back false. I've never seen four false start penalties over the course of six plays. But that's pretty much what the Cardinals did. But that doesn't take away from what the Giants did. They still had to go down the field. They still had to complete passes. They still had to win that game, which they did against a bad Cardinals team. But, you know, you can't slap their hand for putting themselves in that position. It wasn't a pretty game offensively or defensively, but they did come alive in the second half. There's still a lot more questions than answers at this point.
Yes, I mean, I think both things can be significantly true. So to your point, you know, breaking news as well as Villain's point. Now, you know what? You came out of a crappy game. was some crappy ones. But to TP's point, like, I think, you know, again, this is the Arizona Cardinals here, and I do think some significant tanking was on display there. But again, no matter how you get the win, you get the dub. Now, you go out there this week against the 49ers team and put on that type of a show. When we're sitting here next Tuesday, we may have a different conversation, but time will tell. I wanted to move on, give you guys an opportunity to kind of talk your stuff a little bit. We did lose Greenwood. He had to, you know, come back then to the office. TP, I'm going to come right to you, sir. The Detroit Lions dropped a barn burner, if you will, in overtime to the Seattle Seahawks. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that. You already mentioned your running back going down. So hopefully for us, you know, those of us that play fantasy, Jahmyr Gibbs may get an increased amount of touches going forward. But talk to me about how it went down this past weekend with the Seattle Seahawks getting the overtime win.
I can't lie. A great game, to be honest. This is going to burn me the most saying this here now in the kitchen. Dan Campbell, his strategy is going to kill them if he don't get it together. The Lions went all the way downfield to tie this game up at the end of the game, at the end of regulation, because they were down 31-28 at the time. There were two different fourth downs in the game that he is well within field goal range. He's tied and had the lead at one point. He was tied up at one point, and the other time he had the lead. Instead of taking the field goal, and he's well within field goal range, he goes for it and misses it on these fourth downs. Now, I can get it if it's a critical part of the game or this is something to change momentum or things of that nature. There's no need to keep showing your bravado that, hey, I got the playbook. I'm going to go for it on fourth down when I feel like it. It's like, no. This is going to cost you because last year when they went 1-6 out of the gate, that was the same stuff that was costing the Lions because he kept doing that fourth down stuff and they were actually missing out on that. Now, I get it. It's gutsy. It's ballsy. People want to see people play football like that. It feels like he's playing Madden kind of when you're taking points off the board from a team, let alone that 31-28 deficit. We could have been tied at that point or up 3 points, however you look at it, because you took 6 points off the board from the team. You're shooting us in the foot at that point in time. The game is the game, and I know a lot of people sat up there and said, oh, Goff's pick six costed them. David Montgomery's fumble costed two right after halftime, because as soon as we came out of halftime, he fumbled the first possession, first snap of the second half. But those things intricately happen in a game. The situation of how Campbell is coaching could end up costing him if he doesn't use his head. He's not learning. And he basically got out-coached by Pete Carroll in that situation. Pete Carroll's been through these rigors. You got to be smart instead of trying to be brassy in these situations. It's not gonna, these are the questions that I still had around Dan Campbell. It was electric on how he went, 9-11 out of the last 11 games, but 8-2 out of the last 10 last year because he was winning games. But he was actually being smarter, not having to use those fourth downs to get first downs. It's like he's playing the game within the game. And instead, he's going back to his old ways, and now it's like he knows how to respond. He knows people want to hear him talk at the presser. It's like that's not going to get it done, Dan. And you're going to end up costing a team a legit spot or a home field situation in the playoffs or at least an upper seed in the playoffs when you guys have the advantage while the NFC North is down. This is the one thing that's bothering me because everything is going right except the coaching situation. The defense was bad. We didn't get any pressure on Geno Smith, and they were down 2 to 3 offensive linemen. Like, they got to create pressure. I want to know what's happening with Isaiah Buggs because Isaiah Buggs has been out for the past 2 games. They're healthy scratching them. If this is a situation that's happening in-house, then release them. Otherwise, why are you keeping him there, having him in street clothes, and he's not hurt, and we're missing defense up the middle, plugging up the run up the middle, not creating any pass presence up the middle. Everything is supposed to be Aiden Hutchinson. They're chipping him. He can't get back there. This is a coaching matter. Everything else is going according to plan, and the Lions offense is still clicking, even while these people are dropping. We're David Montgomery going down. They think St. Brown has turf toe. They still were able to put up 30-some-odd points at the end of the day. So this is a coaching situation. They got to make adjustments. And I put this at the feet of Dan Campbell. Even though some things happen in the game, things happen within the game. And you got to win a turnover battle. You got to be able to create pressure. And this is the second game in a row, 2 years in a row, they let Geno Smith look like an all-pro quarterback. And they're not getting to him. So Detroit has their issues. The defense, again, is alarming. And to lose CJGJ for the season, that's like popping the helium out the balloon right now. But they still got good, defensive guys back there. Brian Branch is still – they'll probably have to move him, or Tracy Walker's going to be back there one way or another. But to lose the vocal heart of the team and the guy that was actually amping this ski mask situation up is gone for the season – Pro Bowl safety is huge for the Lions at this point.
You know what? You can send Isaiah Bugs right on back home. He can come on right back home.
Don't look at you. Look at you. I want him, bro. I don't know what Campbell's doing, man. They had to fight. Something had to happen. I don't know what that is. Why are you benching him now? Like that's crazy. It had to been a fight. He must have said something about Campbell mom. Something. Not now, man. Like, that's crazy.
I will say this, though. I had a buddy of mine, and we'll keep it pressing here in a second. I had a buddy of mine I was talking to about this particular game, and he said this, and I had to check him. Issue with the Detroit Lions is the fact that they don't have a quarterback. And I was like, my guy, what are you talking about? Like, your man throws for 3 touchdowns, 323 yards. He did throw his first pick in, 100-plus games. What are you talking about? He doesn't need the quarterback, you know what I'm saying? But anybody else want to comment on the Seattle – Detroit Lions game before we move on?
I'm gonna keep it super short, and then Barry can take it if he wants. I'm not gonna actually go with the coaching, because you know what? Nobody had a problem week one when Campbell did the fake punt on his own side of the field inside the 30. If you love the fact that your coach believes in the players and is willing to kind of put it all out there, you got to kind of live with the good and the bad. What I'm going to go with is the fact that Seattle on the road had 0 turnovers and Detroit had 3. And although Goff threw the one pick and it was pretty egregious, as I'm sure Ty would tell you, it literally looked like the intended receiver was the defensive back. He did march right back down the field and hit Reynolds on that in route that was absolutely magnificent. So when you have two teams that play that closely and play that well, and you have one team that's +3 in the turnover margin, I'm going to assume they're going to win almost every time.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Harvey, Velen, you want to talk about this one? You want to press on?
Nah, I mean, real quick, I feel like, Seattle is one of those teams. I feel like that's a team that, If you're trying to figure out a player, or if you're trying to decide between a running back or a wide receiver and you're picking up a fringe guy, if they're going against Seattle, I feel like that's a team you can pick on this year. I do think this is a very close game. I thought Geno played much better than he did even a week ago. I know the Lions should have got out of this game alive. It's weird in the NFL. I think at the end of the year, the Lions are going to clear-cut be the better team. It just, the ball didn't bounce that way this past Sunday.
I can respect it. Velen, anything from you, or are you done with this particular game?
Turnovers, man. Can't turn the ball over at home. Seattle didn't, like I said. They made a comeback, right? They were down 10 in the fourth quarter and fought back, but they didn't get the ball back. When the offense, Goff had he threw the pick six, team back, got the team back in the game. And I think if he had another possession, he probably would have pulled it out, but they didn't let him get the ball back. So that was the way the cookie crumbled. got to take care of the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm at home.
Yeah.
Also, another thing I do want to fill into the coaching situation, since Brian said it wasn't coaching, the Lions got the ball back when the score was 28-31 with 2 minutes left, with the two-minute warning and three timeouts, and he was playing safe ball to end up kicking a field goal when they were moving the ball chunk by chunk, and then end up just running blast up the middle to settle for the field goal instead of attacking their defense that was down Tariq Woolen and everything. Like, these are coaching issues. These are the games within the game. And he didn't coach to win. He coached to try to, you know, see if the defense could pull it out for him in overtime, and he should have went for the kill. These are situations. And I get it. Like, people are going to weigh that option of him getting the fake punt in Kansas City. But for him to be, okay, the first 4th-and-2 was at the 20-yard line. You're not going to kick a field goal. And the second one was from the 33-yard line. Like, I mean, it's a 50-yard field goal, but you're at home. Like, at least why do you have a kicker? Especially in these situations where you could take the lead or put more points on the board. Like, you're the one that ultimately calls the decision. You can't – I'm not letting Dan Campbell dodge the bullet. And no, I was not happy with the fake punt in Kansas City. I was fretting when he did it. I was fretting because it's Mahomes. Like, we got lucky right there, and I'm not gonna lie.
Well, and to that point, real quick.
Yeah.
If you're gonna forego field goals a couple other times during that game and go for it on fourth down, then why the hell aren't you going for? Why aren't you going for broke late in the game? And then if for some reason you can't get it, then maybe you settle for the field goal. But why are you then going out of your way to kick a field goal when your ass had opportunities to kick field goals earlier and you didn't take them? To me, I guess, when I look at it that way, it speaks of inconsistency and a lack of, I don't see what your style is if you're doing that.
No, I agree with him 100%. I'm saying bingo. That's a coach. He's saying what I'm saying. That's the coaching matter. That's the game within the game. Pete Carroll has his number. There are coaches that have other coaches' numbers, and for the past three seasons, Campbell has lost to Pete Carroll. He lost to him once with Russ and twice with Geno. This is 3 years in a row that Dan Campbell cannot figure out Pete Carroll. He got out coached.
Yeah. I wanted to switch gears really quickly and talk about what took place yesterday in Akershire. Normally I go last, but for me, I have a lot to say. I did just record a finger food, which is going to come out probably tomorrow. But I am not impressed with getting this one here. I'm not. I said so on my finger food episode. If you look at the statistics, we had no business winning that ball game. None at all. We were out game 2-1 total yards. We gave up 20 first downs. We only got 9. We couldn't tackle anybody. We are a bad one-win football team right now. That being said, the fact that we are a 1-1 football team, you know, it makes the coffee taste a little bit better this morning, but let's not make any bones about it. Our offense is putrid. As a matter of fact, during the fourth quarter of that ball game yesterday, the fans at Akershire Stadium started screaming, "Fire Matt Canada." You know, so something has to be done. I listened to Mike Tomlin's press conference this morning, and, you know, he said some things about, you know, not painting with a broad brush and typical Mike Tomlin speak. But at the end of the day, you know, if we keep doing the same thing that we've always done and expecting a different result, that's a sign of insanity. And right now we are an insane bunch. I'm very, very fortunate to get out of the stadium with the win. But Kenny Pickett, I said this in last week's episode, is lost in the sauce. He can't hit anybody. And again, miss me with the whole, "Oh, we played the 49ers, we played the Cleveland Browns." No. See, man, hit the man. It's not like it's anything exotic. He's missing wide open targets. I mean, I can at least give, you know, Kenny Pickett some leeway if defenders are making out-of-body plays and Ward is, you know, diving in front of balls and knocking them down you know, the San Francisco 49ers, you know, guy just so happened to make a play on Deontay Johnson and whatnot. No, these are literally balls thrown directly to teams without your color jersey on. I'm pissed. You know what I'm saying? My defense, everybody wants to talk about the fact that they scored 14 points yesterday on the interception and a scoop and score, clearly negating the fact that we once again got ran on for 220-some-odd yards. You know what I'm saying? Like, miss me with this whole nonsense. And, you know, I got Steelers fans in my comments talking about, yo, your defense won me a fantasy thing. I got people in my comments talking about, you know, hey, this, that, and the third. The Steelers did this. The Steelers got to reach you guys one. Can you pick it? No. What? No. I expect better. Therefore, the fact that I am not getting better is baffling me. But once again, we got our stadium with the win. We got the Raiders coming up. I'm encouraged about, you know, the potential for us to get out there and beat on another bad football team. Hopefully we don't, you know, get right, you know, hopefully they don't get right against us, but, you know, time will tell, man. With that being said, I wanted to give you guys an opportunity to talk about it. I know you guys watched it. You're more than welcome to talk about this particular game, or we can press on.
I got two things real fast.
I got
on this.
Yeah. I'll say it real quick. Matt Canada has to go. I think enough's enough. Like, he's a holdover from Ben Roethlisberger. Ben ain't there no more. This guy, they haven't had 400 yards offensive game in God knows how long. Even the Giants, with their putrid offense, has had a 400-yard game. Like, this guy hasn't. Like, serious, I listen to your finger cues. I know. I hear you talk about Matt Canada every time. Matt Canada. This guy's got to go. This guy is terrible. Like, the offense is so vanilla. You got Pickett doing one-step reads, eyeballing guys, getting picked off. Enough is enough. Like, get this guy out of here.
Serious, I've been telling you the same thing about Matt Canada for a year. I told you he was at LSU for a year. The one thing that Ed Orgeron did that was more intelligent than Mike Tomlin is he got rid of Matt Canada after 1 year. We don't care what we gave him via contract. We know that this guy is not going to cut it as the offensive coordinator of the SEC. And if he can't cut it as an offensive coordinator at LSU, he sure as hell ain't going to cut it with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The only guy that was let go from an SEC job that ended up doing pretty good in Pittsburgh was a guy named Bruce Arians. Matt Canada is not that guy, all right? So I've never been impressed with Matt Canada. I don't understand how he's gotten as many jobs as he's gotten when, you know, the most exotic thing that he does in his offense is a little misdirections, you know, motion, things like that, trying to confuse the eyes of the defensive guys. And one of the staples of his offense is the jet sweep by the wide receiver. He was so bad at 3 or 4 games into his tenure at LSU, they lost a game to Troy. Troy, for those of you who don't know, small school in Alabama. And when that happened, Ed Orgeron basically came back. They simplified the offense, had another guy come in and kind of help with the play call. Matt Canada should not have been – he should have been let go from Pittsburgh before Ben Roethlisberger hung it up. So, you know, I was really – I had high hopes on Pickett. He looked real good in the preseason. I feel like this is going to be a breakout year for George Pickens. I told you guys early in the season, if Najee Harris struggles, I'm going to struggle early on in fantasy. What's Najee Harris's performances so far this year? So you guys know how my fantasy teams probably look this year. You know, this is a game they should be able to win this week. Once again, it was an ugly win. Defense did it for you. You take a win wherever you can get it, and a division win on top of it. So good on the Steelers getting that win. But I'm telling you right now, Matt Canada should have been fired 2 years ago, and I don't think he should call another play. Now, Tomlin has got too much class and whatever. He's not going to do that in the middle of the season, I don't believe. But Matt Canada needs to go back to Canada, maybe go call plays in the CFL.
Facts. Call the number is 929-477-2759. Lots of other Sports City chefs here. Wanted to change gears and talk about an interesting game that kind of shocked me. The 49ers managed to win the Las Vegas, you know, prop bet bowl, if you will, beating the LA Rams, you know, 30-23, coming off that beating they gave the Steelers week one. Christian McCaffrey ran like a man possessed. Brock Purdy saved the ship. Debo Samuel found himself back in the end zone. Brandon Ayuk went down. But on the flip side, it looks like, you know, Puka Nacua is that dude. Like 15 receptions, 147 yards against that vaunted San Francisco 49er defense. Kyren Williams, like my man Greenwood spoke about before, he had to dip out with the leading bell cow here. You know, toting the rock for 52 yards, added some catches for overall 100-yard day, if you will. But, you know, breaking news, this is your ball club. I'm calling it the Vegas Bowl for obvious reasons, but you guys got to win against a division opponent, man. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the game was way closer than I anticipated, and I want to give major respect and props to the Rams. They came in without their best receiver. They look good. Their offensive line looks much improved over last year. Matt Stafford looked dynamite. I haven't seen Matt Stafford look this good since the Super Bowl run. Different arm angles, finding guys open. He looked really, really good. So I want to make sure that we give kudos to them. And I do think that the Rams are a sneaky good team, right? Like, we're gonna find out exactly how good they are, but, you know, the reality is Seattle went into Detroit, and Detroit beat KC. I understand they weren't at full strength, but beat KC, and they went into Detroit and beat them. Well, the Rams went into Seattle and beat them week one and was at 17-17 at halftime at Levi's South, which is the 49ers stadium in the South, because about 70% at SoFi were Niner fans. So I give a lot of respect and kudos to that coaching staff for them to realize, hey, you know what? What we've done in the past has not always worked, especially in this particular matchup. They did a lot of different things this time than what they normally do. D-line rotation, the offensive line, like I said, looked much improved. But I think ultimately what you saw, and by the way, Brock Purdy kind of had, I'm going to just say, one of his worst games as a starter. He missed several open receivers. He overthrew probably two or three guys deep, Brandon Ayuk, Jennings, overthrew Debo on easy walk-in touchdown passes. But kudos to the Rams. Played well. Ultimately, the Niners handled business in the second half and got a win over a divisional opponent. I'm just going to tell you guys this. Here's what I want to know. So my understanding is the line moved to 7.5 right before the start of the game. And, you know, most people, if you're like moi, you may buy a point, but some people don't do that, right? You're just like, you know what, I want the extra money. So with time expiring and the Rams on the 30-yard line, like literally no time left and down by 10, for whatever inexplicable reason, the Rams decide to kick a field goal to make it 30-23. And I couldn't help but think to myself at that moment, after I knew that the Niners had won the game, I wonder how many people lost their parlays or lost the bet, because you know there was a ton of money on the Niners at 7.5, and literally the Rams kick a meaningless last-second field goal to make the win by 7. So it was a good game, and like I said, respect to the Rams. They really hung in there. They really did. And I can't wait to play them again in a few weeks. Hopefully Cooper Kupp will be back.
Yeah, man, Vegas be up to something. There was no reason, no effing reason for Sean McVay to kick that field goal. None at all. There's no 10-point field goal. There's no 10-point play. You know, I mean, the referee was rushing up there to set the ball. I mean, it was just interesting. Anybody else want to talk about this particular game before we move on?
Brian at least owes the brunch an apology, but I'll wait till Chandler's around because he was talking that crap with Chandler. And I know Chandler was like, he can't wait to talk to Brian. So just so y'all know, Sports City, Brian is not done for the week. He's here for the Tuesday show, but he owes you one for Sunday. That's for sure, because he said on that show some stuff that I tried to stop him, y'all. Y'all heard me. If y'all didn't hear the brunch, I tried to stop Brian.
Oh, yeah.
And he started going crazy. I'm like, Brian, hold on. Hold on. He's like, TP, trust. I'm like, okay. And he called me mid-game, and he's like, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, I know you don't know.
And for those of you who don't know, I said the Niners would win by 20. At one point, they were up by 10 inside the red zone, about to go up 17, got two dumb penalties, ended up doing a pooch punt, and they basically just did scramble drill at the end of the game. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I said, mad respect to the Rams. I think they're a team that's going to sneak up on some teams. I really do. I think they've got a decent receiving core. I think they have a lot of young kids on that roster that don't even realize that they shouldn't be in these games. And they played their hearts out. They really did. I mean, they're nowhere near the talent level of the Niners. I mean, I heard this crazy stat the other day, boys. The Rams had 14 players in their draft class, and all 14 made the roster. Now, think about that. We're all football minds here. When have you ever heard a decent team having 14 draft picks and every one of them making the roster? So it just kind of tells you where the Rams are at right now. Mad respect for McVay, that offensive line coach, the defense. Like I said, they played their hearts out.
Yeah, I was going to say that too, Q and TP. Like, Nakua is for real. That kid can play. That's a heck of a find. And if you can get Cup healthy in two weeks, right? He's on the IR for 4 weeks, so he's in 2 weeks. You got something there. And I didn't think the offensive line in Los Angeles would hold up. They held that to one sack and six QB hits. You know, that's pretty darn impressive for against that defense, right? So to Hughes' point, respect to that offensive line in L.A., but the 49ers went ugly and, you know, they got the win. I could see, you know, Purdy didn't have his best game, but they still got a win because there's just so much talent around him. You know, they're just more talented than the Rams are at this stage in the game. So, you know, listen, the Rams, their first 2 weeks, nobody thought they would do much of anything. They proved that, you know, they might be able to sneak up on some people and make a little bit of noise. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but I don't think they're as bad as a lot of people thought.
If this wasn't fixed, this was Sean McVay throwing a middle finger to everybody that bet on the 49ers at the very end of that game. And it was a rallying, if nothing else, was a moment of satisfaction to go, you know what, we just effed them all.
I can see Sean McVay doing that. Call the numbers 929-477-2759. I want to go over two more games, but, you know, Mr. Harvey, I'm coming right to you, sir. The other game that was on last night was the New Orleans Saints and the Carolina Panthers. A relatively ugly game until the Saints put it out late. But, you know, Mr. Harvey, I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about it. Your Saints, you know, like, you know, breaking news is 49ers are sitting at 2-0 and the division that has three 2-0 teams. You know, the Atlanta Falcons as well as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were all unblemished right now, but we'll talk about them another time. You're 49, not your 49ers, but your Saints got the dub, man. Talk to me about it.
Man, it was ugly. To be honest with you, Jamal Williams goes down. You know, thankful for Taysom Hill. The guy doesn't need to be playing quarterback, though he did complete a pass. But that guy at least has heart, man. He'll do anything that this team wants him to try to do. Listen, and he's a pretty good athlete, right? So if he adds a passing game to it or whatever, like Taysom Hill's a decent piece for a ball club to have. I was impressed a little bit with what I saw out of Mike Thomas. He took a couple hits and bounced back. Rashid Shaheed showed you speed again on the outside. But the offense is not at all where it needs to be. That being said, listen, defensively, this team is playing pretty nasty. They kind of slid. It was 20-9. Carolina got a touchdown late, but this team now 10 games of 20 points or less. No team in the NFL has a streak like that right now. This is something that hasn't been seen in New Orleans since the 1991, Dome Patrol, which, those guys legendary, three of the four, I think, in the Hall of Fame. So, just looking at what they were able to accomplish, their defense played well. They confused the young quarterback. The Saints have struggled in Carolina recently. They lost to Sam Darnold. They lost to what's the dude's name that played in the XFL? I don't know, man. They've gotten beat by about everybody at quarterback in Carolina. That's been a bad, tough place for the Saints to go play. But I am impressed with the offense. With the defense, I like the young corners. I like what I'm seeing out of Brian Breesy, the kid from Clemson. Carl Granderson has taken a big step. Cam Jordan is solid. And DeMario Davis is still playing at a very, very high level. And I'm seeing growth from, more familiarity in the system from Marcus May and Tyrann Mathieu. So, and some depth on this team. So I like what we got defensively going on. This is going to be tough going into Green Bay. That's another subject to be talked about later on this week. But I think if we can get the running back position figured out, get Kamara back. I talked about Taysom Hill earlier, but at Kendrick Miller, I think that this is, if the offense can come along at all and complement the defense, I still think this team has a legit shot to win this NFC South. That being said, offense still has a lot of work to do. They were able to do just enough. As like I said before, once again, you got a new quarterback. You got some new pieces in. People aren't playing. Brian talked about earlier how you don't really have much contact in the preseason. People aren't playing as much in the preseason either. I feel like when you're putting new pieces together, it takes time for these guys to gel. So for this team to accomplish this goal of winning the division and going into the playoffs and having a chance to do anything, the offense has to continue to improve from week to week. But listen, if you have a solid defense, that's a good recipe that will travel for you. So we'll see. Another big test this week. But what I will tell you, serious, is they've won their first game each of the last 5 years. It's been 10 years since the Saints started 2-0. That year they went 5-0 before they dropped a game. I don't think that's going to happen this year. But when we're talking about something that hasn't happened in 10 years for this franchise, I don't care. By hook or crook, ugly, whatever, 2-0 is 2-0. I'll take it going into week 3.
I respect it, man. I respect it. Anybody want to talk about the particular game? It was the first game of yesterday's doubleheader. TT, breaking news. You guys want to talk about it?
I just want to real quickly piggyback on that New Orleans game. And I know he kind of mentioned this a little bit. No disrespect to Olave, who had the one, the one long catch. But he's totally right. Taysom Hill was the MVP of that game. Every time they needed to confer the first down, or every time they needed to stay ahead of the chains, with Kamara out, Like, right now, he's probably the best running back they have. Like, he runs with a vigor that you don't see quarterbacks run with. And I understand that's why he's not a full-time quarterback. But it is amazing to think that this dude played full-time quarterback in college. And if you watch the way he runs and delivers a hit, it's just fascinating to watch this guy because he does not play the game like a quarterback, not at all.
Nah, he really doesn't. I'm baffled at the amount of money that they gave him. And I mean, I'm a firm believer if you don't master one skill, you struggle to master the rest of them. But again, for what he does, there's a place for him there. TP, did you want to talk about this before we moved on?
The only thing I want to say about this game is that I can't wait to see what the Saints look like when Kamara gets back. I still have my question marks in regards to Derek Carr. I'm not comfortable with him just yet. To go up against a Panther team that watched Bryce struggle and he was still in the game and they didn't take advantage of that Carolina team, I still feel Derek Carr is still the same quarterback. That's why I was saying that I feel like Carolina could steal that game and they were damn close. If there was another veteran in that offense, I think Carolina could have edged it. But it was really just, you know, Bryce Young and Thielen trying to do the magic that they could do within that game. That's why it was so low scoring on the offensive side of the ball. I got to give the Panthers defense credit for at least limiting the Saints as much as they could, but you could just feel the Saints just had too much firepower for them to lose that game. And it wasn't like one of those, you know, abundance of wealth firepower, but it was just enough to get over the hump of Carolina. Even though that's a division battle, and even though Carolina has beaten them before, I got to tip my hat for the Saints to at least have the wherewithal to win that game. But my question mark is still in front of number four, Derek Carr.
I 100% agree with that. That being said, I hope he continues to grow with that offense, but I still think, and I may be proven wrong by the end of this year, but I still think we're better off in the hands of Derek Carr than we are the blank shooting red rifle. That being said, you know, Taysom Hill's a football player. I don't know if he does anything great, but he's a football player, and he's been willing to do any and everything they asked him to do. Special teams, throw his head in there and block, play quarterback, even though Sean Payton only thought he was the guy. He's been in the tight end room. He's been willing to take things at running back. He's an athlete and a football player. So I don't know. I agree with you, though, Sirius. He's probably given too much money. But at least it's kind of probably good to have a guy it's pretty easy to be selfless when you get that kind of contract at that older age. But it's pretty nice to have a guy that's just like, okay, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And listen, in the words of the great Terrell Owens, that's my quarterback. That's my quarterback.
Call the number 929-477-2759. Lock the door for the next couple minutes of Sports City Chefs. I wanted to run down these games, and if anybody wanted to talk about anyone in particular, Bill, please feel free to stop me. We kicked off the week two slate with a Thursday night, you know, banger, the Philadelphia Eagles got past the Minnesota Vikings. The big thing for me about this particular game was DeAndre Swift went off. This brother went silly off. And there's an issue going on in Minnesota. Anybody want to talk about that, or did you guys want to press on?
I'd like to say one thing. Go ahead, Harvey. You go first, man. You keep getting the back seat. You can drive this time.
No, you good. I thought it was interesting. I think just competitive juices with Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, I think that's going to be fine. I did think that they had a chance to kind of put their foot on their neck, and they were unable to. And I was a little bit alarmed the way they kind of let Minnesota hang around in that game and make it real close towards the end.
Yep, that's what I was going to say, Sirius. All I was going to say is, Eagles, I'm not impressed. It took four Minnesota turnovers, and really they still had a chance to win that game in the fourth quarter. I know you can only play the games that are set out in front of you, but the Eagles look like they're still in off-season form. I need to see the high-flying Eagles we saw last year. And they used to have this guy on their team. His name was Brown. There was a pretty good receiver. I don't know if he's still there, but he don't catch balls anymore. So it'd be nice to see him make an appearance.
I got one thing to say. In the words of Sean Carter, a.k.a. Jay-Z, my mama loves me, right? So I gotta say that before I do it, because my mom is a diehard Viking fan. I don't want you to get mad, but I'm going to say this. If the Vikings don't get this figured out, and I'm going to knock on wood and karma, please leave me alone, they're going to get Justin Jefferson killed. Justin Jefferson is that team, period. This is back-to-back weeks that he's gotten 9 catches or better, or I think it's 10, actually. They keep going to him. I know he's one of the most unguardable receivers in the league, if not the best receiver in the league. But if you keep forcing the ball to him, they're going to set a scheme up to him, and he will get lit up. And this is what Kirk Cousins is doing, because I feel like that's the only security he has. I've been telling people about T.J. Hockenson. He may have scored the ball, but I feel like there's more on the field for him to get done while Justin Jefferson is going crazy. They got rid of Dalvin Cook, and they have no running game. Minnesota has no running game. And the worst part about it is they brought Brian Flores in to help that defense. That defense still has its issues. Minnesota has a lot going on in-house, and I don't know if they get this to turn around now, but it's showing up when everybody was like, oh, they were 11-0 in one-score games. They're now losing these games, and they need defense for sure. They better get a running back from somewhere, and if they don't find another threat outside of Justin Jefferson, and KJ's good, like, because I mean, I'm biased, but KJ does do his thing on the offensive side of the ball. They need another threat in that passing game. I mean, Addison has done his thing too, but it has to be consistent. Otherwise, they're going to get him hurt, and I don't want to see that happen. That's the one thing in sports is injuries just bother me. But especially when these guys are great, you know, like you don't want to see a great player go down because they're force-feeding it, i.e. what Barry's going through with Saquon. Like as much as I talk junk to Barry, so on and so forth, like we brothers and all, but it's like I don't like to see them force-feed Saquon because he gets hurt, and it's like you already know he's injury-prone. If you guys put Justin Jefferson in the way of becoming injury-prone, I will be mad at you, and I'm not even a Viking fan, and they ain't my division. So, that's for you, Ma.
You know what? It's comical because – go ahead.
I was just going to say, by the way, in case anybody was wondering, when Steve Wilks takes a head coaching job next year, the Niners defensive coordinator, Brian Flores, will be the next defensive coordinator for the 49ers.
You think he's leaving Minnesota that fast? Wow.
You left Pittsburgh after a year.
I'm pretty sure anybody would jump ship. Listen, if you have a ship that's sinking and you have a yacht, I'm pretty sure most people would rather be on the yacht. Ty, I could coach that defense to be a top-5 defense.
Yeah. I think if Wilkes had gotten the head job, Flores would have been gotten serious consideration for that defensive coordinator job last offseason.
It's very, very possible. And the Vikings got the Chargers this week, another disappointing 0-2 squad who fell this week to the Tennessee Titans in overtime. You don't turn the ball over. You have over 800 yards between two games, you average 30 points a game, and you still lose the ball game to the Tennessee Titans, where their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, threw, and I quote, he didn't throw a pick, but Derrick Henry didn't run for over 100. He threw for 246 yards, Ryan Tannehill did. But, again, you managed to lose the ball game on the road, man. Talk to me about this L.A. Chargers Tennessee Titans game, man. Another head scratcher for me. I will say this, and TP, I'm gonna let you run first. If there was ever a team that invented ways of losing ball games, it's the L.A. Chargers. If there was ever a team that I saw have all the weapons that are needed to be successful on both sides of the football. If I ever saw a team that had the franchise quarterback that we talked about earlier, the franchise runner that we talked about earlier, and these assortment of receivers, defensively, they play exceptionally. They have the name. They have they got the name, but yet they find ways to lose. It's the Chargers, man. It's wild. But TP talking, man. How you feel?
Okay, Sports City. I don't like to do the shameless plug because I don't feel like I'm being shameless at all. I was the only one on the brunch that picked the Titans to beat the Chargers. I knew that this would happen. And it's interesting that you started this up like this serious. It's the battle of the 0-2s, and they both need to win between Minnesota and the Chargers. I think Herbert is now falling into that little decline of overrated because these are games that he needs to win. He has to show up, and he's not getting it done. And he just ain't the big deal. You're going to have to show up just like you, just like Burrow. You guys have gotten well over $250-some-odd million and are losing games that you guys have to pull out for your team. It's hard to already pull out of being down 0-2 right now, especially up against Ryan Tannehill. Wait, hold on. Let me try this again. Against Ryan Tannehill, in the words of Aaron Sirius Simmons, miss me with that one.
I also picked the Titans on Sunday on the brunch because I was like, I wanted to pick the Chargers. I've kind of gone back and forth with the Titans being home, but once I saw that Austin Eckler was out, I picked the Titans as well because at the end of the day, I believe Chargers are going to charge her. And this is going to continue to be the case as long as Brandon Staley is that head coach. He might have been good with the Rams defense, but he got a lot of players. At the end of the day, Brandon Staley's got to go. As long as he's there, Chargers are going to charge her. They are finding more ways to lose games than the Jim Haslett coach New Orleans Saints.
Well, very well said. Talk to me.
Is Barry still here?
No, Barry had to drop off. He had a family thing.
Okay. I wanted to get his take on this, but I got to tell you guys something, and only because Ty brought this up. It kind of baffles me that so many people want to use the hashtag or the quote like Justin Herbert is overrated. Like, what more do you want this guy to do? They have literally averaged 400 yards of offense and 30 points a game in the first two games, and they're 0-2. That defense, which Harvey just mentioned, with the Rams had all kinds of pieces, that defense, there's more money allocated to that defense than any other team in the entire league, including the Niners. Well, maybe not the Niners now because of the Nick Bosa contract, but they are a top two or three paid on the defensive side of the ball team. You've got Bosa. You've got James. You've got Samuel. You've got all these quote-unquote dudes. You're a defensive-minded coach, and you couldn't fight your way out of a wet paper bag. They can't stop the runs. They can't stop the pass. They can't stop committing penalties. They find a way to quote-unquote charge it. But the one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to blame Justin Herbert or that offense that's putting up 400 yards a game and 30 points a game for them being 0-2. You look at those games and you tell me that defense with all those quote-unquote stars and all that money allocated to defense is not the reason that this team is 0-2 right now. This team has had a lead in both games, and I think we all agree Miami's pretty damn good. They've had a lead in both games in the fourth quarter, and the defense cannot stop anybody. The Chargers' problem is the defense is horrendous. You can't have a defensive-minded coach that can't coach defense. Like Kellen Moore is you know, you can say what you want. I know he's made some questionable calls. The offense is okay. The problem is the defense, and if you're a defensive-minded guy and you can't figure out defense and you have all the stars you could possibly ever want, it's time to go.
I told you to give me names specifically when I was calling out Joey Bosa and said that he's nowhere near his brother. I started talking about Mac. I started talking about every last one of those defenders on the team. But knowing that they got to go out there and go shot for shot, like, they he got to get something done. Like, explain to me why he lost to the Texans. Explain to me why he can't cross the Mississippi River and get wins. Explain to me why he can't be Ryan Tannehill going across the Mississippi River again. These are situations that he has to pull out. Like, we know that Kansas City don't have a great defense. They get things done with Jones and so forth. But they know they're going to have to go shot for shot. And for him to be one of the top-paid quarterbacks, who else they going to blame other than the – he got to go there. Too. I get it that he's putting up gaudy stats, but they got to win games. He couldn't beat the Texans at the crib. He's starting to see that decline. I didn't say he's overrated yet, but he's starting to see it.
Listen,
he's starting to see it.
If Justin Herbert was going toe-to-toe with Ryan Tannehill, I would say 100% you were right. But what did the Chargers defense do with Ryan Tannehill? Well, let me go ahead and give you the stats. He was 20 of 24, completed over 80% of his passes, 245 yards, a touchdown through the air, and a touchdown on the ground. Now, I don't need to remind you that he had three interceptions and couldn't complete 50% of his passes week one, and Vrabel was thinking about benching him. The point is, you can't put it on Herbert that the defense forgot how to play. They have to stop somebody. Whoever that is, whoever the defensive coordinator is, the head coach, it's on a lot of people. If the offense isn't scoring, blame it on the quarterback. But you can't blame the quarterback when the defense can't stop the opposing quarterback or the opposing offense.
Yeah, I actually happen to agree with that. The issue that I really find out with the Chargers, I mean, their offense is legit, but at some point, to TP's point, the TP's, you know, situation there, you got to be able to get over the top and win, you know, a something significant. Like, you spell out against Ryan Tannehill, you can't beat Joe Burrow, you can't beat Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes owns you, you blow a lead in the playoffs, you know, your defense, you know, doesn't help you out any. But ultimately, You gotta get lucky. You gotta find a way to get a win, or you do make that turn into overrated status. You know what I'm saying? I understand this is a team game, but when you start looking at, you know, Justin Herbert and what he's able to accumulate outside of the financial compensation, the resume is pretty bare if you ask me. One more game I wanted to get to before we get out of here, gentlemen. I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Actually, pivot that. I wanted to go to the other 0-3 ball club and the Cincinnati Bengals, who dropped their home opener to the Baltimore Ravens, a division opponent of mine. And I'm going to put this to everybody. What in the world is going on with Cincinnati? You know, again, I get it. They started out 0-2 last year. As a matter of fact, the past three years, they started out 0-2. 1 year, they went 12-4, made the Super Bowl. The next year, you know, they made a deep playoff run, and now they're sitting at 0-2. And they have a Monday night matchup versus the L.A. Rams, who we spoke about earlier. What's going on with Cincinnati, man? Harvey, talk to me.
End of the day, the defense doesn't look good. Jesse Bates has, you know, moved on. This, a lot of other pieces, maybe they find something later on. But then also, just the quarterback's not been throwing the ball well. You could say calf, you could say whatever. He started slow last year, not in as much sync. I don't know. But he's not throwing the ball well. And with the way that this defense is playing, Cincinnati is going to have to win shootouts. So they better hope he's back next week. If he's not, you know, you definitely got to drop off at that position. And you know, here's the thing. You rush him back too soon, it may never be right all year. This team needs him, needs Burrow to be on the field, and needs him to play well, which we know he can, and I think he'll have more good games than bad this season. And he's got enough weapons to put up numbers, but that's the only way Cincinnati's going to really win. And I don't think there's a great team in that division. TP told you Baltimore is going to win it, but I don't think there's a great team in that division. And so, you know, they can still get back there, but it's going to have to be a shooting match. They can't play defense right now.
Right. TP, talk to me about Cincinnati, man. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, don't have it. They can't, you know, play defense like Mr. Harvey alluded to. Talk to me, man. How you feel about Cincinnati-Baltimore game?
Well, City, I know I'm going to end up making people mad. The gig is up. The gig is up. Cincinnati, you could try all you want to try to keep putting this on the shoulders of Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow needs to be protected. He's not even able to get passes off the right way. I have Chase. Ja'Marr Chase is barely getting targeted. This is bad. If they can't get any time for him, if he can't hit the guys, if he can't get to Higgins or Chase, like, they're done. I've seen people in different fantasy leagues, they're dropping Boyd. Like, Tyler Boyd is not even – they're letting him go because they can't get targets to the receivers. The gig is up. If you don't protect Burrow, and already he's been hampered for the past couple of seasons, his rookie season he tore his knee up. He had an injury, you know, tried to bounce back the second season, even though he went to the Super Bowl, and now he's hurt again. Like, you guys have to protect him. You guys just put over $200-some-odd million into this guy. And he can't get upright. You guys don't have the proper position players around him. And you got studs at the receiver position. I don't know what you guys are banking this on. The defense is a question mark. You guys didn't improve much than what you have and thinking you're just going to just pull your gun out and start shooting. No, people are shooting back, and that division is looking like it's going to start passing you by because guess who's in last place in the AFC North? The last team in that division that went to a Super Bowl.
I know.
Oh, and if you don't know.
Breaking news, you want to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals-Baltimore Ravens game before we get out of here, sir?
Yeah, man, I'll keep it short and sweet. I think most of this has already been covered, but listen, I'm a proponent. If you score 24 points on offense, you should be in and able to win a lot of games in the NFL. That defense is the most alarming thing to me, and specifically the run defense. Serious, they've averaged on average. Now, granted, it's only two games. And I understand they just faced Lamar Jackson, but they've averaged giving up over 190 yards on the ground each of the first 2 weeks. You can't win games like that. Anybody who watched that game, I can't tell you how many times I saw the Bengals get the Ravens into third and manageable, third and short, third and three, third and four, and they just pick it up, halfback blast, Gus Edwards right up the middle, and they just get the – first down every single time. And, you know, you can't win games like that if you can't stop the run. And right now they're a team that cannot stop the run.
Yeah. Breaking news, man. Thanks for coming by and kicking with us, man. Give us a plug and a close out as you shut it down, sir.
Yeah, well, listen, it's a blessing to be with you boys tonight. It was a lot of fun talking with you. Barry, I hope when you listen to this back, man, listen, don't take it too personally. For years and years and years, my team was horrific, and I had to hear Chandler and Ty and Sirius and everybody else give me guff. They don't take the wins off the scoreboard, so you're still 1-1 regardless. Hoping you go 1-2 after the game this Thursday. But, boys, it's a blessing. Go to sportscitychefs.com. Like I said on Sunday, there's a lot of really good articles up there, especially fantasy football advice. I would definitely recommend checking it out. I think the takes are a whole lot better than the bigger networks that are less in touch with reality. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming by Breaking News. And, man, again, congratulations to you and your family. Mr. Harvey, you know what to do, man. Shut us down, man.
Yeah, what he said about the website, like, subscribe, share, help get people out to check out this Food for Thought. So we can continue to give it to y'all, phiapparel.co. Check us out tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. For College Cookout Thursday as well, 9 p.m. Eastern for Roundtable Gumbo. We got some other NFL games to get to happened this week to chop up. Going to preview the next week coming up, man. And then Sunday morning brunch, the time of Sunday morning brunch, 11 a.m. Eastern every Sunday. Listen, it's always nice to be 2-0, you understand? Who that? Laissez les bon temps rouler. Peace.
Thank you so much, Mr. Harvey, man. Go enjoy that pizza, my guy. TP, man, you know what to do, man. Give us a plug in and close out as we shut it down, sir.
If mama call him Clay, I'ma call him Clay. And just like they said, you know the Cardinals was letting that game go. I could bring the people that was around me. I was like, the Cardinals will lose this game. And I could show you the screenshot of me sending that to Barry at halftime when he was down. I knew it was going to happen. I knew it. There was no way that I thought the Cardinals were going to win that game. It just looked alarming the way that they blew that game. But we'll save that for that and more tomorrow. There's more coming out of me. Believe me, I ain't done. I ain't done. You lucky Sirius and Brian had to break up the fight because I was still throwing pizza, blueberries, strawberries. I was throwing everything I could at that. Boy, I ain't playing around. I don't play around. I don't play them games, man. SportsCityChefs.com. You already know how this website go down. All these boys up in here cooking. This show was electrically hot. I love every last one of these dudes with my life, and that's my word. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I share that very, very, very sentiment. Love every one of these brothers, man. Shout out to everybody who's been rocking with us, man. Shout out to, man, Mr. Harvey, who kicked it with us, man. Villain, who had to go handle some business. Breaking news is in the building, man. It's good to hear this, man, on a consistent basis, man. It's kind of nostalgia, you know what I'm saying? When I first came into Sports City, it was on, you know, breaking news the show, man. So it was funny hearing that guy. With that being said, man, I wanted to say something in closing. Life is precious. Life is precious. Thoughts and prayers go out to the New England Patriots fan that unfortunately lost his life due to senseless violence in the stadium. Listen, we all fans. We all love our squad. You know, we may have had too much to drink or whatever the case may be, but I don't think it's ever a cause to take a life. So with that being said, as you guys are out and about handling your business, doing shows or going to video games or whatever you guys are doing, just be safe out there. With that being said, Lord willing, I'll catch you guys on the next one. And as TP said, man, telephone to the chefs again. If they don't know, man, now we know, man.
Sports City Chefs, cooking up hot topics, the blood on the pool. They well in tune, blue like a cup of juice. Superman verse, Emmett the clouds move. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we love that again. Sports City Chefs.
Connecticut.